Welcome to this special episode of the GEI podcast. This is Michael hosting, and indeed, we do have a historically significant episode for you today. On October 3rd, we hosted a panel discussion at the GEI in observance of the 30-year celebration of the German Unity Day. Before we play the audio recording of the panel, though, allow me to refresh your memory with a few dates. The fall of the wall is dated to November 9th, 1989, which is also considered as the end of the separation of West and East Germany. But there were still some negotiations that had to take place and legalities to be cleared before the official reunification, which is dated to October 3rd, 1990. As you probably expect, German efficiency dictated the speed of this process. On February 2nd, 1990, representatives of the German government started the 2+4 negotiations with the Allied forces, the forces being the United States, France, England, and Russia, because their consent was needed to proceed with the dream of reunification. On August 23rd, 1990, the East German Parliament voted 294-62 in favor of the unification of East and West Germany. And barely 8 days later, on August 31st, 1990, a 900-page contract ratified the reunification and declared Berlin as the capital of Germany. Subsequently, the official day of reunification is dated to October 3rd, 1990. Of course, in the sense of history, there is a lot more to this reunification, but for the purpose of the panel discussion, it was of greater interest for us to ask, how did it actually unfold from your perspective? How did it feel? And how has the world of the Germans changed throughout this particular period of time? And to answer these questions and numerous others, since we did have audience participation questions, you will hear from an esteemed panel of Germans who were actually there when it all unfolded. Joining us on the panel are Barbara Müller, the Honorary Consul of the Federal Republic of Germany. Barbara is an attorney in Minneapolis. She's been living in the U.S. since 1996, and she's originally from West Germany. Anke Jagusch has been in Minnesota since 2004, but originally comes from Mecklenburg-Vorpommern, a former East German state. Anke is also a language instructor at the GAI. Verena Walter, who is an attorney in the Twin Cities, joins us on the panel. Verena is from former East German Neubrandenburg. She finished her law degree in Leipzig and practices in the US since 2005. And Professor Henning Schröder, who has been in Minneapolis since 2007 in varying positions at the University of Minnesota, and Henning's perspectives are West German. Before we actually roll the intro and the audio, I have to apologize in advance. The quality of the audio recording is not exactly as you would expect it, as crisp as it usually is. It is a live conversation that we taped. And while the verbiage throughout this recording is absolutely family friendly, there is a little bit of drama in there. It does get passionate at times. So with that being said, enjoy our recording and welcome to this special episode of the GEI podcast. Of the Germanic American Institute.
Welcome.
Willkommen.
Where Germanic-speaking European countries
Germany,
Deutschland,
Austria,
Österreich,
Switzerland,
Schweiz blend with the Midwestern United States.
Hallo.
Servus.
Grüezi.
We are here and there, and we invite you to come along on the journey. What do you remember of that day, November 9th, 1989? That's my first question to you, just to see whoever wants to eventually revisit memory lane.
So I remember that day that I was out in the evening with friends. I came, the Germans know that there is at 10:30, I think it's now, Tagesthemen, right? So the late news. And I came home at about that time, and I turned my TV on just... And I didn't understand what was going on, because there was not the normal program. There was some kind of reporting about people just drinking and being in a very jubilant mode, and in between a press conference from Krench, where he was. So it took me some time to realize, and until the news anchor came on to explain that the wall had come down. So it was completely, it took me quite some time to understand what happened, but I definitely didn't realize that that would be of any huge importance for the future.
We didn't have we didn't have telephones. But then maybe 9 p.m. or so, my neighbor knocked at the door. I lived in a newly built apartment block in a suburb of Berlin. And she knocked at the door with her baby on her arm. Anke, you got to see that. Switch on the TV. You won't believe it. The wall has come down. So, you're right. Say, no. It was a Thursday evening. And the next day, I had to work at school for 6 hours. And then Saturday, we worked too. So I thought, I don't want to hear anything out of the ordinary right now. And this can't be true. And even if it's true, the wall is open, tomorrow by 10 a.m., it will be closed again. So maybe it's a weird thing. Like, if you just cannot imagine that suddenly things happen, your brain won't even process. Yeah, your brain just can't take it. And I did this most dumbest thing. I went to bed. I felt, I have to be fit tomorrow. Nah, it's just not true. My sister, however, lived directly at the Bornholmer Straße. That is where there's a bridge going to West Berlin. And she went to bed early too. And then the next morning, she had to get up at 5:30. She looked out of the window and she said, something is wrong today. Everybody is going the wrong direction. What's up with that? So Bornholmer Straße, there can't be traffic from east to west. It's like a dead road, dead end. And then she said, what is up with that? And it took her forever. Only when she went to work that Friday morning, she learned, yeah, Ilka, you must believe it. The wall is open now. Well, so this is how she learned about it. This is how I learned about it.
So I lived in Düsseldorf at the time in November 1989. And I didn't really get the message on November 9th because I was out in the Altstadt and had a dinner appointment and came home really, really late. And it wasn't really until I watched the late news that something transpired. I went to bed, said, wow, that's amazing. The next morning, I called a friend of mine who worked in a lab that was right next to the wall at not Checkpoint Charlie, but Checkpoint Invalidenstraße. I used to work there in 1981 as an intern. You could see Bahnhof Friedrichstraße across the wall from those laboratory windows. And I asked him, so what's happening, Harald? What do you see? And he said, well, when I'm looking out the window, Invalidenstraße is open, and I see all these East Berliners going back to East Berlin in very orderly German fashion after a night on the town in West Berlin. That was my live stream in 1989. There was no internet. So I had to call Harald and say, what do you see? And he gave me the entire story, and that was the early morning of November 10, basically, yeah.
Verena?
I was in high school at that time, 12th grade. And of course, we followed the news all those weeks and months beforehand, and also of that evening. We had one girl in our class that had a boyfriend at the border police or border army in Berlin. And she hadn't talked to him for 2 weeks. They were in high alert. And so I think the whole class or a lot of people were afraid that this whole situation would explode at some point, because more and more people were getting out of Germany into the Czech Republic, over through West Germany, Austria, and how long are the East Germans going to allow that to happen? So it was really a high sense of fear, I would think. What's going to happen? Who's going to die? Who shoots first? That's what I remember from that evening. And then all of a sudden, the wall was open. On Friday morning, we all went to school and high discussions, of course, what's going on, what happened, who else is missing. So in our school, people, families left. They left through Czech Republic to Hungary, so apartment buildings, cars were left standing, apartments were empty, people just left. And so now all of a sudden the wall was open. And we, a couple of friends of ours, we made the plan. And on Sunday morning, we 3 o'clock, we boarded the train to West Berlin because we wanted to see that too. 17 years old, our parents, very, very nervous. Are you really going to do that? You don't know where to go. Are you going to come back? Or will they close the wall by then? So all these questions, but... I think by then, 3 days later, we just were excited. This is something we need to see. We need to find out what they told us all those years. Was it true? In West Germany, West Berlin, or let's get our own picture of how West Germany is like.
If I may just continue with you right away, Verena. I believe it's fair to say that this is probably a very significant blip in time, so to speak, that really happened very fast, very rapid change that anchored itself in your mind to remember that. But what were the months after that like? How did that new reality manifest? What came about out of this?
Well, we came back. We went back to East Germany. and I think that came out of our education, some might say it brainwashing, you know, from youngest age, first grade, even maybe kindergarten on in East Germany, you were trained to become a socialist, to become a member of the Socialist Party or one of those other four parties. So you stood with your country. So that was my feeling and the feeling of my classmates. We have to go back because we want to make the East Germany, the GDR, better. We don't want to be one Germany. We just want to learn from them and maybe make our country better. So we came back and finished our high school, of course.
So you still sort of lived in a divided mindset kind of idea. Did I get that right?
Yeah, I would think so. I was at me personally. I was really disturbed by the fact that those Monday demonstrations, they started with "We are the people, we are the people," and then it shifted slowly into "We are one people," and that really disturbed me because from the idea going, "Let's make East Germany the better country," to "Let's just become one country and be done with it." That was an idea that didn't sit well with me at that time, but then again, I was a 17-year-old, brainwashed, socialist kid over there, right? Oh, I'm sorry.
Henning, how was the experience on the Western side, suddenly having the influx of Eastern Germans who came during the day and apparently went home at night?
Well, in my case, actually, it was not November 89 that was the formative experience to learn about East Germany. It was actually February 89, because when I was in Düsseldorf at the time, my boss was a Republikflüchtling, so he left the GDR in 1973 in the trunk of a Czech diplomatic car through Checkpoint Charlie and made a career in West Germany in academia. And when basically East Germany was willing to collaborate more with the West due to economic reasons, as of 87, he asked us, "Are you interested in going to East Germany for a month or so?" I had never been to East Germany. Maybe East Berlin, just visiting as a West Berliner. So in February 89, I spent 1 month in Erfurt at the Medical Academy to work with East Germans, which was something I had never done before. There were lasting friendships coming out of that. The discussions were incredibly open. People were fed up with the system in many ways because of a number of reasons. But I remember one conversation before I left after these 4 weeks in Erfurt, said, "Okay, at some point, we all, the people I worked with in Erfurt, East Germany, and myself, we all want to go to the south of France on vacation. And we can do that when we're all 65. Because at 65, East Germany would let everybody go to collect their retirement benefits in the West. That would have been 2025. And we were convinced this is how it's going to be. And 6 months later, this wall is gone. And we could do that trip in the same year. So this is an experience that makes me always say, anybody who wants to predict the future, there's always things you have not taken into consideration that might happen. So when the wall came down in November 89, that was the opportunity to reconnect with everybody from Erfurt in no time. So they came, we didn't go to the south of France immediately. We met in Düsseldorf, we met in Erfurt again, and actually my first job as a tenured professor was in Halle, an der Saale in East Germany. Academia in West Germany was an old boys' network. You needed to have connections and some powerful professor who would give you a job. I wasn't part of any network because I've been in the US quite a bit. When East Germany opened up, there were possibilities to get positions that were where the sort of old boys network from the West didn't have a handle on. So I, as a Vessi, I went to Halle.
Anke, in the beginning you said that you were sort of surprised and in disbelief that the border cannot possibly be open, the wall cannot possibly be open. I guess the next day sort of came to the realization, you came to the realization, actually it is open. How did the coming months shape up for you?
Well, that Friday after, 50% of the students were still at school. As I said earlier, I worked as a teacher in a suburb of Berlin, Berlin-Hellersdorf. It is Berlin, but maybe like 50 minutes away from the city center. 50% of the class came, the other 50% were with their parents on the way to West Berlin. Then Saturday, just a handful of students were there. I thought, oh, that's something. Everybody's running away. Well, we got to deal with it. But I was really, really worried. I was worried about the future because I was at this point, how old was I? In my late 20s. And everything was so well established, well structured, well planned out for you. So you go to kindergarten, then to school, then you get your placement at university, everything is paid for, and I already had one daughter. She went to daycare, we called it kindergarten, and of course you don't pay anything, just a few pennies for the warm Mittagessen, for the warm lunch. And then suddenly I felt, wow, this is not going to stay like this. But which direction are we going as a country? And then, of course, I worried about my own family members. Yeah, I was not really confident that this is now the big, glorious, fantastic time that people may think it was when you see the pictures, when the wall opened, there's champagne and party. And then that one big, big word was all in the media. Wahnsinn. We were so speechless, but this one word, Wahnsinn, that's insane. Yeah, so Wahnsinn. For me, it was like, yeah, wall is open, but I'm here. And I just was in the first year of my first job as a teacher, and we just had an apartment. And it was so hard to get an apartment when you live in a socialist country. And I was young, and already we just acquired a Trabant. That was the car that everybody so badly wanted. Usually you wait up to 20 years. We already got it through some tricks way, way sooner. And everything was bright and wonderful for me the way it was, except a few things that I didn't like. But then suddenly everything upside down. Well, I was curious too to go over to West Berlin. And I went just by Trabi. Went to my sister's house at Bornholmer Straße, left the car there, you never know. And I didn't really know if I would be able to drive in West Berlin. So no, I walk. I go over that bridge. Oh my God, it was so far. It was like a mile long bridge. and I was not the only one. And then immediately on the other side in West Berlin, they could tell where I was from. And they directed me to Sparkasse. Go, and get your 100 Mark Begrüßungsgeld. You may have heard about it. Yeah, everybody got 100 Mark D-Mark Begrüßungsgeld. That felt so dirty, like as a socialist personality, dealing with money right away. And so it's not about money really, but yes, I gladly take it. And then I had this money in my head, in my hand, and I didn't really know what to buy.
We'll get to the spending power here mm-hmm. in a little bit.
And everybody was so nice, and everybody was so well-dressed, but I definitely felt like I'm in a foreign country. Oh, by the way, we did not say East Berlin. We said always Berlin, Hauptstadt der DDR. Yeah, East Berlin or even worse, I come from the Zone. Ich komme aus der Zone. Yeah, you are a proud citizen of the German Democratic Republic. And it's not the wall, nicht die Mauer. If you say die Mauer, this is already, you get suspicious looks. You're supposed to say what? Does anybody know? Exactly. Antifaschistischer Schutzwall.
So anti-fascism border protection.
Wall. Yes.
Wonderful.
Right.
We'll get back to that in a minute. Barbara, when you revisit those coming months, or the months rather, after the...
It's, first of all, like here Verena said, I was also on the western part. I was of the opinion that it was very nice for East Germans that they were allowed to travel now, but they should have their own country. We were okay with our country. Everybody is fine. There was no need to unify anybody here. And it's kind of, and I'm still convinced that if there had been at the time some kind of referendum, something, I do not believe that the West Germans would have voted to have a unification, and I don't believe that the East Germans would have voted for it either. So it was a decision that was made by politicians that by now, obviously, everybody is kind of okay with. They're still, you see, to this day, you see strong division between East and West politically and economically, and so there are still huge problems there. So definitely also kind of like, yeah, there's no need for a unified Germany. And for example, I was at the time at the end of my lawyer education in Germany, and for example, it was what for Henning was kind of a positive that there was no old boys network, blah, blah, blah. For lawyers, so my class, basically, we graduated in summer of 1990, so just before the official unification. Everybody in my class who had a law degree, barely made the exam with a kind of a D minus or so, everybody went to East Germany and took up positions there as prosecutor, as judge, so lifetime positions. So they were settled for the next 30, 40 years with really bad lawyers from West Germany. And that's just, it's kind of, because those people, they were too bad to get a job in West Germany, and East Germany took everybody. So yeah, they had to, exactly, so.
Do we want to explore that a little bit deeper? there seems to be a slight undertone of, let's just say, objection and perhaps a little bit of regret built into this in terms of reunification, that it really wasn't that necessary, that it caused a couple of issues that could have been avoided perhaps by not voting for that?
No, at that time I would have voted against it, of course, Well, I say of course, but now, 30 years later, it had to be done quickly, I think, to not drag it out. Yes. Yes, rather do it quickly and go on with it. For me, my 12th grade, so you finish high school in East Germany with 12th grade, it continued for us just as planned. Some of the subjects that were really socialist subjects, like communist history, things like that. They were swapped out to get us a little bit more up to speed on what is democracy, how does it work, things like that. But otherwise, my 12th grade just went on. We did a big class trip to St. Petersburg, or Leningrad at that time, I believe. So that was still the usual thing. You do what you had to do. And then in the summer of 1990, the monetary union happened, which was a big, big thing for all in East Germans. How much can you buy now for your East German money that they converted basically 1 to 2 down? How much could you buy with your West Mark in the stores? And that was before the day of unity, the very first day of unity in 1990. And I think many of the East Germans are still bitter about that fact that there was not an equal exchange of the money, of the currency. Economically, looked at, of course, there are reasons. East Germany was not as strong as West Germany, but for emotions of the East Germans, my parents, my grandparents, they felt bitter about that fact.
Henning, how did you experience this?
What Barbara just said, I think I would like to add to that. You said that a lot of your classmates with a D, they ended up in East Germany. So in my field, when it comes to professors getting positions or being recruited, there were either very young people, and I count myself into that category at that time in early 90s, or actually the majority of those who went from the West to the East were people who were a little bit, professors or academicians, who were a little bit older, who never got a so-called Ruf or an offer for a professor in West Germany, and then at old age finally made it. And when I remember how some of my like West German fellow countrymen of older age behaved when they became professors in East Germany, and so finally could sort of reap all the benefits of being the unchallenged a person who can determine on life and death of every student in that department, basically. That did not really reflect very well on West Germany or on those who went to, those would be the D candidates in your category. And I think at that time, in those early 90s, things went so quickly, and companies were privatized so fast. People were laid off so fast because West Germans, for some reason, had given themselves a deadline. Within 4 years, we are going to have all of East Germany brought up to speed for capitalism, and the Treuhandanstalt basically did that. That created so much resentment, I mean, for good reasons, and I felt a lot of that when I went to Halle in 1994. As I said, I was the only West German on the faculty and not very popular. but I can understand why that was the case. Had there been a way to give the whole thing a bit more time, I think it would have not created all the resentment or trauma that maybe even now is reflected by a lot of people voting for the AfD.
While we are getting the first audience question, one last question before we hand off the microphones. Do you think, and I'm just reaching for an assumption here, if you will, do you think that the speed in which the transition took place was really done by design to just squash any possible objection, or is it just how it just by accident kind of unfolded?
I mean, in hindsight, it was done in 1 year, and you had people like Mikhail Gorbachev, Bush the father, who was a very cosmopolitan, worldly U.S. president who understood world politics, that was a one-time window. If you look at world leaders now, I don't think you could pull this off, yeah. German unification.
And it's kind of like Verena said earlier, I think that the politicians in charge very briefly after stuff started to happen realized that they have to pull it through fast, kind of like, as we said, pulling off the Band-Aid and just create facts and get it done and over with and then go from there. So it's kind of, I think, they were not really themselves in control. When you think about before the wall came down, when, for example, the former foreign minister there, Genscher, when he was in Prague in the German embassy, where thousands of East Germans had found kind of refuge, that wasn't something that the West German government had planned or was even anticipating. They were completely open in that breakfast event there when they are this camping event when there thousands of East Germans came over from Hungary that weekend. None of the politicians had anticipated that, so, and the wall came down by an accident, as we all know. So it's kind of, it was all just on the spur of the moment, people just, the politicians just.
And Anke, before we have the first audience question.
If you say it went fast, it really did go fast. Just 11 months after the fall of the wall, already came October the 3rd that we celebrate today, and the contract of reunification was signed extremely fast. Most of my family members said it's insanely fast, and they felt like they can't even keep up. And it's not enough time to learn, it's not enough time to collect yourself and try to process what actually is going on. But now it's 29 years ago. I almost think, why are we even talking about it anymore? It is what it is. And I don't even think it would have helped much if we had stretched it out. And then when I hear these stories that the lawyers, not the best ones, they came and they got good positions. One branch of specialists was even faster. People who knew how to sell cars.
Let me move over to the first audience question here.
Good evening, everybody. My name is George Dudel. I'm from Düsseldorf, and I'm here with the Neuss delegation because of 20 years anniversary. I remember this time. It's so close for me. I was 27, and I'm wondering a little bit, because what I didn't hear, you are talking about we had time and it was so quick and the West German people more or less have been ugly and they wanted to have everything what we had in the past. I think if you look back and if you compare, especially today, there was during that time to, because of two great politicians, Mr. Bush Senior and Mr. Gorbachev. There was a small window for people who didn't have this advantage like you to get with contacts. You had contacts if you had good relationship to the politicians, but the most people have been scared of this ugly regime, this what they call communists, we are all the same. No, they have not been all the same. They were poor people, and they have been politicians in their island, yeah, in a closed shop. And there was a small window, and intelligent people used this small window and said, now we can do it. Do you think after that time you would ever had a chance to do it again? Maybe wait a year. You said too quick, wait. There was a window again today, for example, with Mr. Putin. Go to Mr. Putin. Now, after 30 years, we think about the good decision to open the wall and to reunificate Eastern Germany and Western Germany. There was only a window, and great people made a great decision to give these people freedom. Freedom to people.
But I see the point is, I'm sorry to interrupt, but the point is, you assume that this one Germany is the only way that people in East Germany could have had their freedom. The idea that people like me in West Germany, and I'm not sure where you get the idea that I or anybody else here had any connections to any politicians, but the idea that people like me had was that there was space for two Germanys, and that East Germany could have tried to find their own way. It's kind of just because Austria was annexed by the Nazis in 1938, nobody would think that they should remain part of Germany, right? And so, and they are, let's forget about the recent elections there, but they are a democratic country and a well-established country. Who says that it wouldn't have been possible for East Germany to become another very well accepted, very history. Wealthy.
History told me this. History told me this. Because you now can say, maybe we have time, but we who promised you that you had the time? It's not for sure that you had the time. And if I see Russia for
we are both speculating, right? We are both speculating.
No, I'm not. Look what's going on in Russia. Go to Mr. Putin and ask him.
Germany is not exactly the stellar country at this point of time, especially East Germany. When I'm looking at the party that is winning all the elections there, and part of, and I think that came up earlier here as well, part of why the AfD is in such a huge kind of movement up is because of all the problems that were created at the time of the unification, where there was not any consideration of what people in East Germany were thinking about the currency not being exchanged one-on-one, etc. That is all part of the history that is now reason for the AfD being so strong.
So with the current changes, the rise, if you will, do you think that this actually really had latent effects starting from there? So just to put the lid on this question, really, the changes that are taking place today, 30 years later, do you think that it really started 30 years ago, that it slowly, surely built up to that degree? Is that essentially?
So as far as I can tell, and Sandra, you are welcome to contribute here. As far as I can tell, a huge issue in East Germany nowadays is that people who are well-educated move over to West Germany. And in East Germany, lots of the people who stay in East Germany feel that they don't have any future. They don't have, they feel kind of neglected, whether rightfully or not. And that's why they go to parties like the AfD. That is the typical nationalistic party who plays on the fears of immigrants, immigrants, etc. And I think it may, I don't know, but it's kind of when I'm thinking, for example, I didn't even remember that the currencies weren't exchanged on an even level. I have to admit that. But it's kind of, I can see that people in East Germany would still feel bitter about that, because it showed from the very beginning they were not equal, right? And once you get that idea, how do you get over that?
How does this inequality play out nowadays in the neuen Staaten, if you will, so to speak, in the neuen Bundesländern? Is that inequality still present to that degree? Is that brain drain taking place, if you will, toward West Germany, and if so, to what degree?
My hometown is Neubrandenburg. It's a city 2 hours north of Berlin. In times of the GDR, it was the youngest city in East Germany, meaning the government pumped a lot of money and built a lot of apartment complexes, made the city bigger. So we had, in a 5-mile circle, we might have had 10 schools because there were so many kids, so many people there. We had 86,000 inhabitants in Neubrandenburg. Now it's 50,000. So, and they are all retirees, my parents. So their kids, like me, went away. They didn't all go to West Germany or the US. They moved to other cities like Berlin, where jobs are available, Rostock, bigger boom cities, Leipzig, Dresden. But in those smaller cities in East Germany, really, there is apartments are empty. It's really ghost towns, how I saw it. I was there this February. It's sad. Once a bustling city, now it just has retirees there. Colleges, schools closed, apartment buildings razed, empty spaces where people and kids played earlier. Just one example. Other cities, my brother moved to Rostock. Rostock is a harbor city on the Baltic Sea. Absolutely bustling, beautiful. Many people live there. People build houses. So there's both sides, of course. Yeah. And my parents also have problems finding doctors, because no doctor wants to live and work in a provincial city. So they would have to go to Berlin, 2 hours away, to get to the eye doctor, which is scary. But we find that here in the U.S. too, right? People in places in outer Minnesota, they also have problems finding doctors. But that plays out in Germany as well, which is a weird thing to witness.
Outside of the historic significance of being Austrian, I am taking the liberty of being neutral here. But the one thing that really stood out to me here, particularly in the last 15 minutes, is the one thing that I did not expect. We do have a tendency, Germans, Austrians, Central Europeans, to be well-behaved, very strategic, logical, and just kind of low-key to some degree, until it gets heated. I'm not exactly sure where the heat is coming from. Why the emotion? Where is that pent up? Why does it still exist 30 years later?
I'd like to add something to what has been just said. I'm not a German, but I have lived in East Germany from 1975 to 1981, and then went to West Germany. And then when the wall came down, I have been following it very closely because my wife, she's in East German too. And two things I'd like to mention. One is the school I went to do my Diplom Chemiker was Merseburg, which had the largest chemical department in the entire East Germany. And they had very good faculty. And when I started working for my company at 3M in Neuss, Düsseldorf, I tried to build up some collaboration with that group. And I went over there and started to do some collaboration. But pretty soon it turned out that most of the teachers, they were actually fired. And part of the reason is because every professor, whoever wanted to do have a career, they had to be in the party. I mean, it's not an option. Now, some people are more involved in the party, some are less. So a lot of the faculty were removed, number one. And I'll give another example. Our chemistry department was one of the largest in East Germany, probably 100 or whoever. So in 1999, we went back for a reunion with my colleagues. And it turns out that in 1999, of all the friends we had, my colleagues, probably one or two persons have been successful in career. Most of them were, I'm talking about 1999, because that was a generation who were a little bit too old to get accustomed to the new change. And so I can understand why there is so much frustration for certain generation about the reunion and unification. The other thing what I have heard, I listened a lot to German podcasts, etc. I think that children, the next generation, they are doing much, much better, but they are also very influenced by the history of their parents and grandparents.
Yeah, I just want to add another facet to this entire discussion here. I find it really fascinating, having married someone from former GDR and listening to the West German, opinion of what happened, how fast it happened, and whether it should have even happened. I think I'm as neutral as possible. You're neutral as an Austrian. I get that. But I think one thing we should remember here is the fluidity of history. And we're all acting as if all of this was carved in granite at the time. However, I'd just like to point out that West Germany was West Germany more likely because it was occupied by the United States Army. I'm an American combat veteran, 27 years as an officer in my United States Army and Special Operations Command. And I frankly wonder if West Germany would have even existed, or perhaps you would have just been an extension of East Germany. So I just think we need to think about that. I don't know that you would have had the autonomy that you enjoy, or that you enjoyed up until the wall came down. So just to throw that in there, from a third perspective as an American and someone who had relatives stationed in Germany as you were occupied. And our occupation of West Germany was not to subjugate West Germany, it was to hold the Soviet Union back. So I just want to add that. So with some of the acrimony here, the animosity I still hear, I'm fascinated by that. We seem to forget that little tidbit of history. That's all I have to say.
Henning. With the microphone, please.
Yes. Yes, sir. So what you just said brings back to me some of the things I remember when I first went to East Germany before the wall came down in 89, earlier in the spring, and then when I lived there for 10 years. It is really just the pure personal luck or chance that you have. In my case, growing up in West Germany, he was born in 1958, being actually forced to reckon with German history in school, and I'm talking about German history of the 1930s and 1940s, and being very critical of growing up being not really liking Germany as a concept at all. I think that was different in some ways in East Germany, and when you look at the North and the South of the United States, the Civil War was in the 1860s. You're still dealing with it. When I remember conversations with my colleagues in Halle in 1995, and they were telling me, "Oh, East and West Germany, that's not a topic anymore. We're all one. It's all going to be fine." Period. And I was thinking, three generations, maybe four generations before. Not that we don't sort of get along during these three or four generations, but there's a lot of stuff that was different in my upbringing, in your upbringing, and then our children sort of take that with them for a while. It's going to be fine eventually, but it takes a lot longer than people in the 90s thought.
My name is Tim, and I was very intrigued to hear our Aussies say how content you were with your life. Am I misstating that? You actually thought your system was superior. My parents were in the West and immigrated here. And I always had the impression that people in the East were people who lacked ambition, and the people who stayed there just kind of didn't get the heck out like people who had the ambition or the initiative. But I also had the impression that people who were there were chafing to get out. They were chafing under the restrictions, the lack of freedom, and so talk a little bit about that. I guess is it a factor of you were doing well and thriving under that system, so you weren't eager to get to the West, whereas half of the people who had left your classroom and disappeared, just couldn't wait to get out. Was that kind of a 50-50 divide? Or do you have any sense of that?
A general answer to this could perhaps be like a fish who lives in an aquarium does not know anything else but the aquarium and thinks all around us is just water and I get my fodder and I'm happy. Or like an animal in a zoo, born in a zoo, does not even know what freedom is and how to define it and has nothing to compare to. They keep the animal happy, they feed it, there's some entertainment. So we didn't have the means to really compare much. And like, for instance, when I was born in 1963, the wall already existed for 2 years. And if the whole society is built up like the typical socialist society, this is just not easy to have different perspectives, but it's never too late. And what I find kind of intriguing, what was said today in the speech by Angela Merkel in Kiel, where the Festakt of Day of Reunification is being celebrated, she said a very smart thing. Like, she wondered all the time what her relationship was to state and state authorities, and she clearly defined herself also as so-called Aussie. But then she said, the new freedom for all of us also meant a new responsibility. And it also meant like the mündigkeit that we so badly wanted. Being mündig means so like we have the way to speak out on ourselves. This is one thing, and that was phase one in the revolution. But when it was suddenly there, it is a totally new question of responsibility. And this is something that you have to have within yourself. And this is not really tied to who is in charge. Is it now Erich Honecker or is it Egon Krenz? You need to have something higher than that, that makes you a human being, that makes you a free thinking being. And I'm so, so grateful. I was not even 30 years old yet, that I could learn what it means to think for yourself, to think straight, to gather information, to define what is it even to be a good person, or like now we are a unified country. What are the values? What makes Germany Germany? That is a very philosophical question.
And
that goes
and
very,
we will
very
likely
deep.
Not cover tonight. That's the problem.
I've been thinking about it the past 30 years, and I'm still not done. The book market is full.
If we resolve the last 30 years tonight, 2 hours, we're great.
just one example also to Tim. I remember when I heard this story from a guy who was in East Germany and who considered himself to be always very critical to the regime, and who said that he was trying to raise his kids also to be critical. And at the time the wall came down, his oldest son was about 11 or 12 or so, and he reported this thing that they were watching the news in the evening after the wall had come down. And at one point of time, his son turned around to him and said, you know what, Dad, I really don't get it. Socialism wins in the end, doesn't it? And he realized how his kid, even though they had tried at home to not kind of create a resistance fighter or so, but to keep critical thinking in his kids, that they were just not able. So from early on, as one of you else said, they were raised in a socialist country. And it was socialism wins in the end. Was hard for them.
We are down to about 10 minutes, so we probably have room for two more quick questions and even quicker answers, please. And then a quick closing statement from each panel member before we wrap it up. But here's the next audio question.
I think one more great comment, and I would like to pick up on the comment earlier about personal experience. And we've talked a lot about systems and regimes and politics. But one opportunity we all have, I'm a West German married to an American, and there are many other sort of interesting connections here in the room. We have a wonderful opportunity to not make judgments based on principles, but on personal interactions, and take the advantage of learning that there are humans in all those organizations, all those nations, and we're often far too, I think, limited by principle thinking versus looking really who are the humans we interact with. And that's, I think, what brings us all together, no matter where we are. And we should be thinking more about who are these other humans I like, who are interesting, who think like me, have family values like me, and not so much about the principles of political regimes, even though we're, of course, influenced by where we are brought up.
You know what the real problem is with time? It runs out. I think we have one last question. Let's do that.
No question. I just wanted to mention, like she said, she grew up and she thought how nice East Germany is, and I grew up in East Berlin or East in an eastern zone, and I mean, as I remember, my parents always, their whole idea was, and all our neighbors to get over to the West. you know, we learned Russian, I had a communist thing there, and starting to be half a communist, and we had English, and on the side they taught English, and we all left, and we left our house there in 1952. We just went over there. And so, I mean, there was a desire of the people that lived in the East that I remember to get out of there, you know. But of course, that's a generation earlier when we left in 52, you know, when I'm born in 1941. So we left in 52 and, you know, left everything standing there, didn't, you know, everything was gone. We left the house there. By night, we had some chickens that we brought over the border with a bike. So it's, you know, and we were happy to get over there, get out of it. But if you got, I guess you got so indoctrinated, you know, that's a different opinion. So I'm really very grateful that I got out of there and that had a chance to go to university in West Berlin and be over here now.
Well, since we are at the end of our allotted time, I just want to hand it back to the panel one more time for essentially closing arguments, if you will, and ask you what you think about the reunification, today's standards. Is it still great?
So Anke, I want to come back to something you said early on. You said unification, you learned it's all about money. Now, and I agree with you. I'm at the University of Minnesota. Students have to pay $60,000 for a bachelor's degree. And that is ridiculous. So I totally agree with the notion that history goes in cycles. I'm not saying socialism has to come back, but if you look at the US in the 1930s, there was much more that had to do with public programs and public support than we have now. So I do believe that some of the things that you were talking about will find their way back into our society, not just in Germany, but also in the US. We have an election coming up in 2020.
Thank you, Henning. Verena.
Yeah, of course, without the unification, we wouldn't be here, right? We might be living in Moscow. I don't know. No, I'm very grateful that it happened. How it happened, there's no change now to be made. But I skipped West Germany, so I went from East Germany after in 2005, but right here to America. So I never felt like an East German foreigner in West Germany. I heard many of my fellow East Germans say that they it needed time for them to feel at home in West Germany once they moved over there. So I never had that. So I'm just being a German here in the US, which is kind of liberating because nobody judges me by being East or being West. So.
I couldn't have said it better. I had 12 wonderful years in reunited Germany, wonderful, wonderful years in the city of Leipzig. And then another phase came coming to the US, and it definitely helped to learn what it means to adjust to a totally new environment, to deal with people who were raised differently. And this is life. You have maybe 70, maybe 80, maybe 90 years. Just make the best out of it. Nobody can live your life for you. There's, like I say, higher things than East or West or zone this, zone that. Just live your life and learn what is good, what is bad, what is fair, what is not fair. And yes, it helps. Money is not everything, but everything is nothing without money. But where else would you have better chances to make money if not here?
And Barbara, if nothing, done, spent, got it. Well, with that being said, of course, thank you to our four panelists. It was, I think, audio drama to some degree, some things that I think no one really expected to come about. But at the end of the day, really, the idea to differentiate the two tables was to show that there was a wall. There is no wall anymore. And I think it is our responsibility, just to get a little philosophical along the lines that you were at, it's the wall within us that we need to get rid of. With that, thank you so much. Thank you.